Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of T2RL Talks, the first for 2024. We're going to talk this evening, it's evening for us, whatever time it is for you, about the progress towards offer, order, settle, deliver, which I think everyone agrees now is the way forward for airline commercial technology. And I have with me in the studio tonight the heads of our two industry practices, Ian Luck, who heads our distribution practice, and Bert Craven, who heads our technology practice, as well as being deputy CEO of T2RL. So busy man is Bert, which is not to imply that Ian isn't also very, very busy. I want to start by saying that although we are now thinking maybe a few years ahead to the transition towards a full-blown offer and order world, a lot of the industry is still very much involved in the rollout of NDC, which is an essential precursor so that we can move to offers and orders in all the channels. And there's been quite a lot happening in the last few months in the NDC world, and Ian is very close to the pulse on this one. So maybe, Ian, you could give us a bit of a review of what's been happening in America, and especially the contrast between the three big traditional network carriers in America, American, United, and Delta, who are all taking really quite different approaches to NDC.
Yes, that's right. And we've spoken about this before. I think it's been a big subject through 2023 and on into 2024, with American, who've been doing NDC for a very long time, but really accelerating in the last year in terms of their drive for adoption, with various numbers, 40% or more of their fares no longer distributed via EDIFACT. Of course, they have deals with all the GDSs, so their content is available to all the GDSs and the travel agencies. But we've heard lots of comments from agencies about the readiness of the NDC technology, the GDSs, the corporate booking tools, and other third parties who are involved in the travel distribution chain. And we have people like Jeff Clear, Amtrav, speaking fairly positively about it. We have a number of other players saying that America's going a bit too quickly, really, particularly given the readiness of, as we said before, GDSs, corporate booking tools, and so on. American certainly seems to be accelerating. They seem to have pushed further through the latter part of the year, and we're seeing more stories of the amount of fares being removed increasing. So it looks like this is a trend that will continue. United also talks about having a lot of content differentiation between EDIFACT and NDC, but that's primarily via continuous pricing. We saw stories about 40% of the fares in 1 month on the direct channel being continuously priced. They have removed basic fares from EDIFACT, although they've made a point of saying that those fares are not particularly sold by the TMC channel, which is the channel that requires the most servicing and the most complicated to adopt. So United seems to be sort of in the middle. And then Delta remains with the position that they will do NDC, but not until it's ready. Very much kind of currently still leaning in, depending on the GDS EDIFACT technology. We assume they will move, but they really seem to be determined to kind of make sure they don't go ahead of the rest of the travel distribution chain.
You did mention that there is an opinion widely shared that the technology isn't yet ready. Bert, do you see any signs that NDC technology is being improved anywhere?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it depends where you're sitting. You know, if you're maybe sitting at the travel agency end of the supply chain, NDC may not appear to be ready to you. Again, particularly if you're dependent on a number of players in the supply chain between you and the inventory of the airlines that you sell. I think for airlines who have adopted NDC, you know, there was a kind of a step between being able to sell and being able to service properly. But I think the level of adoption suggests that it's regarded as good enough for airlines. And there are still people on the receiving end of NDC who are saying, this is not properly embedded into our stack. It's not embedded into our business processes. It's not, it's, you know, it's breaking things for people further down the value chain. And so this perception of readiness is very much a question of perspective.
And even within the travel agency community, we see different views from an online travel agency that doesn't have a lot of dependency on some of those other players, owns its own technology,
yeah,
doesn't depend on corporate booking tools, doesn't depend on other systems so much, who, you know, it's widely stated that that's been the primary sort of first movers in the travel agency world, you know, versus a TMC that depends on more other systems. So it's and there's a whole range of other travel agency types in the middle.
And there may be places where the technology is stronger and weaker. So it may be reasonably good on basic offer, but there are some weaknesses maybe around servicing. So if servicing is a really important part of your business, you're going to feel the pain of the shortfall in technology much more than if you're just selling fares and not having to do a great deal of servicing.
I think even then, sorry, just one more point on this, just to make it even more complicated, you know, the variation exists between different airlines as well as different types of agencies. So, you know, we hear that certain airlines have developed good servicing capability. Amex GBT, who've set a high standard for NDC technology, have said that Air France KLM, for example, is working well with them and Amadeus and making good progress on, you know, enabling a lot of the capability. And there are other examples as well where we, you know, hear of airlines whose servicing capability is good in NDC. But of course, if you're a travel seller and you sell 30, 40, 50 more airlines, if some have got good capability in some all areas, but others don't, and you look at the whole package, you may say, I've got some really good things about NDC over there with that airline, but not that airline over there. And this, so they face the challenge.
If you're a travel agent selling a lot of different airlines, your reporting of the quality of NDC is going to tend to be based on the worst experience you get as opposed to the best.
What I find interesting is that in the NDC schemas, as published by IATA, there is a schema version 21.3 that was supposed to be about addressing some of these shortcomings. Hmm. And yet I don't really see a strong correlation between the airlines that have adopted 21.3 and those that are considered to have good servicing capabilities. I suspect that even in the older schemas, the 17.2, the 18.1, I think it was possible to do servicing well if the airline was motivated and invested in the capability.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. We hear that people believe that once we get 21.3 in place, particularly some of the kind of disruption in voluntary servicing things will improve. Some carriers have augmented their 17 or 18 versions anyway. So some of the vendors have. So just because you're on 17 or 18 doesn't mean you haven't improved it as well. Mm. And it's also true, of course, that 21.3 was published in 2021. Vendors and airlines that are in-house have used that in 2022 or even in 2023 to actually create the product. But not many airlines are actually live with 21.3 and with people connected on the other end of it yet.
No, that's right. I think it's about 8 altogether.
Yeah. I also think that the reporting of it tends to be based on the fanfare around certification as opposed to what quality of service has been implemented. And I think also again, this comes back to this perception is that if you're sitting right at the end of that sort of value supply chain, the quality of experience you're getting from any individual carrier is only going to be as good as the weakest point in that chain. These are distribution and sales and chains that have a lot of components in them. And so I think there is going to be a high degree of variability in experience for some time to come.
And I think that variability is probably one of the big issues that the industry as a whole needs to address. And that's certainly come up in conversations that Ian and I have had with some travel sellers in the last few weeks. They are desperate for a bit more uniformity in the way that airlines implement NDC, even even airlines who are using the same schema version and the same technology provider still have different processes that the travel sellers have got to adapt to.
Yeah, I think there's been endless commentary on the level of variety of implementation that can exist even within the standard. So on exactly the same version of the standard, exactly the same certification, but still enough variety to cause issues.
You know, we've talked a little bit about what's happening in North America, where the three big traditional carriers have taken really quite different approaches. I think in Europe, there's been a little more uniformity of approach between the three big groups, IAG, Lufthansa Group, and Air France-KLM, have been broadly going down the same sort of path. Would you agree with that, Ian?
Yes, I certainly think they're kind of closer in the way that they're strategies have developed. There's certainly differences between them. Carefully, exactly what I say, given I was employed by one of them previously. But from public information, you know, they all have a surcharge on EDIFACT. They've all done deals with all the GDSs now. IAG did Sabre recently. I think that was the last one of the set of the three to do the three. They all have surcharges on GDS NDC, which is not common, but those three do. IAG and Air France KLM, of course, did their private channels where they sort of delayed the impact of the changes, the surcharge in particular, on the TMC channel most notably, which Lufthansa never did. So yeah, that's one significant difference between them.
And Air France have continued to slip the dates on that, haven't they? Just recently they announced a deferral till July now, I think.
Yeah, that's right. From the end of 2023 now to July 24, presumably related to the kind of speed of adoption of NDC with TMCs.
And of course, Air France is closely allied with Delta in its transatlantic joint ventures and in SkyTeam. And maybe that's putting a slight brake on Air France's adoption.
Yes, I mean, they have quite different strategies in the all three joint ventures. The alliance partners are kind of not perfectly aligned on how they've treated distribution. They've done different things at different times. Probably that is, if the difference between Air France and Delta is maybe bigger than some of the other alliance partnerships. But it'll be interesting to see what happens as that develops.
Just picking up on the point on surcharges, because that is a contrast between Europe and North America. The only North American airline that I'm aware of that's introduced a surcharge was Hawaiian, and that immediately got it into litigation with Sabre, which has just been settled apparently this week.
That's right. The Hawaiian was the first. Air Canada, if we're talking about North America, not the US, would be the other one, and we don't yet quite know what the implications are of Hawaiian's settlement.
No, we don't know the terms of the settlement, as far as I've been able to see.
But it was settled with prejudice, i.e. neither party is able to bring the same claims again, i.e. so they've clearly come to some agreement.
Yes, and Hawaiian surcharge has been in the market now for a while. Air Canada's implemented theirs, although they also had some kind of pause or waiver for some corporate bookings. So again, there's been a sort of theme of how do you protect those corporate travellers who've got the kind of most complex needs and perhaps require a bit longer to get the technology all working properly and the corporate booking tools and so on.
And of course, it's never simple in the airline industry, is it? Because whatever Hawaiian does next is going to be somewhat influenced by the proposed merger with Alaska.
If that goes through, of course, we don't know quite how those things...
The recent ruling on JetBlue and Spirit suggests that the regulators are
looking closely at these
growing
things.
Some teeth.
Let's see.
Okay, and just to sort of complete the tour of the world, let's think a little bit about Asia and Australasia. Certainly, from what we can see publicly, Qantas has been really quite, I was going to say aggressive, but that's the wrong word. But Qantas has been quite enthusiastic in pushing out its NDC capabilities, and I think Singapore has as well, and coming a little bit closer to Europe, Emirates has been one of the leaders. So there is activity in all regions, I guess. Maybe maybe the big gap at the moment is China. I don't really see the Chinese airlines going out to market with NDC offerings.
Yeah, I mean, there has been some NDC work, but I think there's a close link to TravelSky with the relationship between the Chinese airlines and TravelSky. So I think it's more of a sort of combined effort in that market.
I don't think the Chinese carriers have the same economic incentives to, you know, get into a fight with the provider of their distribution and PSS services.
Very diplomatically put. and that does open up another question, which again has been raised by some of the travel sellers we've been talking to, is, are all the airlines sure they understand what their objectives are in rolling out NDC? You know, is it a distribution cost-saving play? Is it a revenue enhancement play? Is it just a fashion?
I think it's definitely getting clearer. I mean, and that's been the big change that I think I've seen over the past 2 or 3 years, is that there was some very odd conversations, not with these kinds of leading carriers that we're talking about, but, you know, airlines saying, well, we're going to do NDC. And then there would be quite a long conversation about, well, what does that actually mean? And where does this sit in your commercial strategy and so on? I think the thinking has clarified. Obviously, I think from observing the leading players in each market, it's sort of saying, well, you know, are we going to do a Lufthansa? Or are we going to do an Air France KLM? Or are we going to do an American airline? So I think people's views of what the options are for doing NDC, as it were, and where the potential benefits are, have crystallized. I also think that we are now getting into, in terms of that kind of formulation of the business case stage, is that there is this kind of, well, everyone else is doing it, and ultimately there will probably be a cost of doing nothing. So I think those two things, the opportunity becoming clearer, and the fact that, you know, we're certainly in the middle of NDC now, if not starting to get into the tail, is driving, I think, clearer conversations. And I think that some of the arguments about NDC, i.e. this is a business model flip, this is a way of bypassing the GDSs, pretty much all of that language that we were hearing a few years ago has disappeared from the conversations about NDC.
And that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, I think more people are thinking about the revenue upside.
Yeah.
There were clearly airlines that have always thought about the revenue upside. I mean, Lufthansa in 2015, I remember saying that the actual distribution change in terms of cost was not intended to be significant kind of for their bottom line. It was all about taking the first steps on the road to being a digital airline that could sell much more effectively to customers. It wasn't, you know, yes, there might be some ups and downs on costs and surcharges and things like that, but it, you know, ultimately the long-term objective was about selling products more effectively. And I think a lot of airlines see that. There's clearly airlines that would, like any company, is looking at their cost lines and thinking, you know, one of my top 10, 20 costs in the company is distribution, and does NDC give me a way to reduce that? And people are still thinking about that question. But it is probably a more balanced conversation now, where people are thinking about revenue and starting to see some examples of airlines doing it. Still early days for the sort of use cases, but, you know, we've seen more airlines doing continuous pricing. We're starting to see a bit more use of some things with ancillaries and bundles and things. It's still early on, but there's definitely more plans in that area.
Yeah, and I think that is the change, is that people aren't talking as much about NDC as they are about the stuff we're going to do once we've got NDC out of the way, i.e. NDC is the enabler, and then we're going to do this merchandising or that dynamic pricing or this continuous pricing or whatever it may be. But I think that's the thing that they're attaching the revenue benefit to. And I think the cost argument is, I think everyone's realized that this is, at least in the short term, it's incremental technology and it's going to involve incremental cost.
Yeah, and I think this conversation is a very neat segue into the broader questions about how the airline industry in general is going to move forward to the much bigger set of changes around moving to a fully offer and order-based environment. And I think, as you just said, Bert, NDC is an enabler because you can't move into an offer and order environment unless all of your channels are capable of accepting offers and creating orders. And NDC might not, in theory, be the only way of achieving that with some of your indirect channels, but it's certainly the only one that's had any significant investment or work so far. So it probably is what we're going to have to work with.
Yeah, I think that's, we're not going to see an alternative to this. It's, you know, I think it's now a sort of a necessary and inevitable step, and everyone will line up and do their NDC transition. But I think it will also, I mean, I think we're going to end up stopping talking about it. I mean, IATA have almost stopped talking about it themselves.
Oh, IATA have very definitely stopped.
Yeah.
It's now selling with offers and orders, or distribution with offers and orders.
And to be fair, it is much more productive to talk about those things and to talk about it in that broader paradigm of offer, order, settle, deliver. Absolutely.
We won't talk about NDC again until we implement something new. Well, the amount of times that we talked about EDIFACT before NDC came was, EDIFACT's become something we talk about much more now that we're differentiating between it and NDC.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's the old saw that says basically you should never put the word new in a product name.
Yes.
And I think maybe that lesson has been learned. So let's think about the moves towards offer and order. We've seen some interesting announcements and activity over the last few months. Probably the biggest sort of concrete announcement was at the IATA WPS back in October, when Amadeus announced its new offer and order-based platform, Nevio, and also announced a couple of launch customers for it, which I think is very significant. So far, I don't see a similar announcement from anyone else, but I think there must be some in the pipeline.
Yes, I mean, I think anyone who's been following the Amadeus evolution, you know, that recognizes Nevio for the marketing packaging that it is. You know, that's not necessarily a negative connotation. I think all of the major vendors have got to get their narrative and vision straight. And if that means that you give it a nice new name and some branding and so on, then that's fine. But ultimately, you know, anyone who regards themselves as a serious technology player in offer, order, settle, deliver has got to start thinking about laying out a roadmap and communicating really clearly about where we're going and how we get there. And, you know, if Nevio is Amadeus's first clear public foot in that direction, then that's good. And I would expect other vendors to follow suit, because at the moment, I think a lot of carriers are waiting for that clarity. They, you know, they want to understand, you know, have I got to throw the baby out with the bathwater here and change everything? Or is one of my incumbent vendors or the incumbent vendors in the market going to come in and explain how I get from here to there?
Yeah, I think there are interesting differences in the approach to market. I think the incumbent big PSS providers have got one set of drivers, and then you've got a whole bunch of other vendors who've not traditionally been suppliers of airline commercial technology who see an opportunity in the transition to offer order. Probably SAP would be the most obvious example of that. And from their public statements, SAP are certainly investing in an offer order based solution for the airline challenge. What I find very interesting is how differently those two sets of vendors are going to have to manage the inevitably long transition period when both traditional P&R's tickets and so on will be around and the new offers and orders. And I think it will be quite different for those two types of vendors.
I think we're going to see very different messages. I mean, you know, I think Amadeus are going to be playing a very sort of straight bat in the sense of this is a big transition and the only way to manage it is carefully and with people with masses of, you know, years of industry experience and so on. And then there will be other vendors saying, look, you can't turn a horse and cart into a Formula One car in a series of incremental changes. The only way to move forward is to get rid of the old and bring in the new. And that's sort of to be expected. I mean, you know, I think this that kind of language exists around every big inflection point is, you know, is there a way to get there in a series? You know, can we cross a chasm in a series of small steps or have we got to make a big leap? I think we're going to see a lot of messaging on both sides of that. And there will be people who have appetite for a leap and there will be people who only have appetite for small steps.
Yeah, I think some of the vendors who are looking at this market and responding to some of the RFPs in the market now coming from essentially the technology industries have got this tradition of move fast and break things. And that is so countercultural for the airline industry that hates the idea of moving fast and breaking things that we are going to see a period of I suppose, great diversity in approach. And I'm looking forward to, you know, the first airline that really embraces this philosophy of trying to move very fast. And yeah, okay, some things might get broken along the way.
I think part of the problem is that there are lots of retailers out there who have embraced the move fast and break things thing. And I suppose the closer you are to a digital product, the easier it is to sort of move fast and break things because digital product is quite malleable. But the airline business is basically like logistics. It is incredibly brittle. It breaks easily. And once it's broken, it's really hard to fix. And so there are going to be a lot of airlines who look at these vendors and go, no, you look like the potential bull in my China shop. Get out. But there may be others who say, you know, well, who just have, it's this appetite for risk, really, at the end of the day. Can we, you know, can we forge ahead and prove that things can be done in a different way?
And of course, we saw that over the last few years, at least in one fairly small example, Flyr, which started with a blank sheet of paper and started their business purely working with offers and orders. Now, unfortunately, Flyr did not succeed for reasons that I don't think were connected with its technology decisions.
Absolutely. Not a technological issue at all, I don't think.
So that experiment was curtailed too soon.
Yeah. It's a difficult one to call because on the one hand, you want to sort of hold them up and say, well, although there were issues, they did manage to get a working stack up and running. And by all accounts, talking to people involved, it was sustainable. They could have, you know, if in a different economic environment, put it that way, they could have made a better fist of it and it wasn't a technological issue. And there are airlines coming along who seem to be looking at the lessons learned there and trying to adopt some of the same technologies and business processes and so on, who will be operating in far more favorable economic environments. So we're going to see the proof of that pudding, you know, in the next couple of years, I think. So I'm very excited for what we learn from this. I think this is going to be, a really challenging but very exciting inflection point. There's masses of opportunity here.
So the opportunities that I think are most widely observed, one is around pricing, the ability to move to truly continuous pricing, to price every offer individually and put the right offer in front of the right customer at the right time and all of that good stuff, which has traditionally been very constrained by filed fares and RBDs and all of those good things. So I think that's one big opportunity. Another opportunity is the ability, in principle, to sell anything. So not just your flight product and your seat and your baggage and whatever, but, you know, as our colleague Jonathan often says, you can sell toothpaste, you can sell champagne, you can sell whatever. So I think that's another big opportunity. And then I guess another one is really tied to the pricing issue as well, which is the personalization, the creating individual offers to suit individual segments or individual customers. So I think all those things are exciting, and there are really good examples of all those sort of things being done in other industries. And I think there's a lot of people within the airline industry who are really quite champing at the bit to get those opportunities. But there's a big technology hurdle to get over to enable it.
Yes, definitely. And well, there's two big hurdles, I think. One is fundamentally is will your customers who buy flights from you buy something else from you? You might be prepared to buy a flight from an airline, but would you bet your annual family holiday on them? You know, so those kinds of things. Would you expand the set of services that you buy from an airline to include your holiday? Some airlines are, you know, sufficiently strong in terms of their brand and their relationship with their customers that they can do that, and they will, you know, they're regarded as credible broader travel resellers, and I think others might struggle. But then the same thing applies to, well, you know, if the opportunity in becoming a more competent retailer is not just price, and it's actually merchandising and being able to sell more things, and perhaps things that have a slightly better margin than an airline seat, are customers going to take you at your word? Are they going to come to the door? So that's the first challenge. The second challenge is absolutely technological, and it's not a solved problem by any means, which is travel products. The more complicated they are, the more things they contain, the more brittle they are, and servicing travel products is really, really hard. That's going to be the next big sort of technology frontier. Is you either, you know, once you get into selling complex composite travel products, you either have a big call center and a lot of calls, or somebody's going to have to make some very serious investment in technology to allow better self-servicing of big, complex, brittle travel products.
And this, of course, may be where we find some strong applications for AI in the industry.
But as I said, this is where the opportunity will come. And I don't just mean for airlines and travel sellers. I mean for the technology providers. Is you know, we are in what we like to call a target-rich environment.
I just want to pick up on something that you just alluded to, which is this idea that airlines could become an overall travel retailer, selling all the components of a journey or of a holiday or of whatever. Is that going to lead to conflict with the channel, Ian? Are the people who sell airlines today in the indirect channels, are they going to sort of kick back against that?
It's an interesting one. I mean, there are some airlines already that have fairly successful holiday businesses and have invested lots of effort. I mean, in the UK, BA, Virgin, EasyJet, Jet2, there's a range of companies that sell both. Some of them very focused on that part of their business. I think in many cases, if the airline also works effectively with indirect sellers and the indirect sellers feel they have a fair chance to sell the product, that can work well. If as the airline, you somehow feels like you're giving your direct channel too much of a advantage, then that definitely can impact on relationships with third parties. But there is a fair few of those companies have pretty strong direct holidays brands and also sell a lot of package type fares with travel agencies. So I think in most cases, a lot of people would say as long as it's a fair competition, then that's absolutely fine.
But it's a long ladder. I mean, you know, it's maybe in the European market, certainly, but in countries where the package holiday is a sort of a cultural phenomena, that's always been a strong market. But beyond selling other travel products, you've got airlines like AirAsia who are trying to almost turn themselves into like a lifestyle
super
brand.
App type. Yeah.
The whole super app notion. Absolutely. You know, I think we have to accept that there are ambitions well beyond that. And there are groups who own airlines and banks and supermarkets, you know, and we've seen that, you know, in some markets.
And there'll be more partnerships. I mean, some of the airlines that have holiday businesses do it themselves, but then contracting hotels globally is You know, some of them are very good in certain areas. I think a lot of the BA and Virgin, both pretty good at selling the Caribbean, for example, but selling everywhere in the world. We also see a lot of airlines that have holiday businesses, but they partner with Expedia or lastminute.com or Booking. So you'll see more partnerships emerge as well, maybe.
Successful partnerships, though, are going to need technology and they're going to need standards. I mean, this is the absolute key, is whatever it is you're going to sell, if it's not yours, you need to be able to integrate really well with whoever it is, you know, whoever's got that product.
And that presumably is one of the motivations towards modernizing the technology in the way that we've been talking about with offers and orders and modern data structures and.
I think, when we talk about airlines being better retailers, I don't think airlines are particularly bad retailers. I think we give them a very hard time and they give themselves a very hard time. When we mean better retailers, we mean at least as good as the other people in the market that we'd like to form partnerships with.
I also think part of it is a lot of the people that have developed good retailing in the airline world, it's often quite a big project to do it. So some of the thing that's kind of hard to quantify as a benefit of moving to offer order is, once you've done it, the next good idea you have, you might implement in 3 months, not 3 years.
Yep.
So, you know, I think airlines have developed good holidays packages and continuous pricing and ancillary, a lot of the things that we think offer order will do. Some airlines somewhere have done it already, but often it's been quite a big, complex project to deliver it with various bits of sticking plaster and stuff in the back end, that manual processes, other things that have been necessary. And you know, hopefully a lot of those things become, you know, many more airlines will be to implement many more ideas much more quickly.
Yeah. And I think looking at retail, there's this idea that being better retailers mean that airlines have a much broader range of products. But if you talk to airlines, they sort of say, well, yes, that is true, but not necessarily visibly, i.e. at any given point in time, I might have the same number of products available, but they might change much more frequently. It's like, you know, 7-Elevens in Japan, they completely reshelve the store two or three times a day to deal with morning traffic, lunchtime traffic, and even evening traffic. And it's an amazingly efficient operation dealt at reshaping the business to the footfall of the customers coming through the store when you've got limited space, right? So this idea that, you said, Ian, of being more agile and being able to adapt and being able to change products quickly and bring new things to market, you're not necessarily changing your product lineup within a day, but certainly seasonally and certainly in response to market changes. When we talk about speed to market and airline agility, it's those kinds of things. So when I go to an airline website, I'm not necessarily seeing more products on any given day, but I might be seeing a much broader range of things over a period.
If I can summarize some of that, then the transition to offer order is going to be a bit of a slow burn in terms of delivering benefits. It's going to give us a platform on which we can deliver benefits long into the future. Based on that modernization and standardization of technology. One thing that worries me a little bit about that is, how do you build the business case for that big investment you've got to do today when the big returns might not come for many years? I'm not sure we can solve that in a T2RL podcast right now.
Well, I mean, here's the thing is You can't solve it in any generic sense. The answer to the question is going to be different for every single airline based on where exactly they are today. And, you know, an airline who spent the last 5 years investing in their retailing and merchandising, there's much less of the prize left for them in the transition to offer and order. But there may be other opportunities. And so, you know, I don't want to sort of pretend that there's some kind of generic all-purpose wisdom for calculating a business case. It is an absolutely scientific and data-driven thing. you know, and we've worked with a number of carriers on this, and there is no one answer. It's absolutely about analysis. In any airline, the number of people who you're going to have to convince and take on that journey, the argument for transition has also got to be absolutely unimpeachable. You've got to be able to show the receipts. So again, the idea that you can, there's just some kind of generic formulaic, here's the thing that's going to make the transition worthwhile for you. No, this is an airline by airline business.
Okay. I'm very much reminded of, there's an Oxford professor called Ben Goldacre, who's been around for quite a while and specializes in using data effectively in his particular specialism, which is medicine. But for a while, he was selling a T-shirt with, I think you'll find it's more complicated than that, written on the front of it.
It's always more complicated than that, yeah.
And I think that's a general rule for life. We haven't talked about settle and we haven't talked about deliver, and I don't propose that we do on this particular podcast because we're coming to the end of our allotted time. But I think we will return to those two subjects in a future podcast and future reports, because they are equally important building blocks in putting together the whole environment.
Yeah, and it would be awful if you could cover the whole thing in 1 hour as well. I mean, always leave them wanting more, Ian.
Yeah, so that's our current view of the moves towards offer, order, settle, deliver, the current rollout of NDC, which is essentially an enabler that's an essential precursor. I'm sure there'll be lots more to say. We do write lots more in our offer, order, settle, deliver status report, which is available now to subscribers. And we will absolutely be discussing some of these things in much more depth at T2RL Engage 24, which we're already well into the planning phases for. So we look forward to seeing some of you there. But for right now, I'd like to thank Ian Luck and Bert Craven for joining us in this discussion. And I'd like to thank you for listening and look forward to talking to you again in the next edition of T2RL Talks.